If you want Colts talk all year long, you're in the right place. This is the official Colts podcast, giving you an updated look at what's new with the Horseshoes.
Skids off to Taylor. He's in. Touchdown. INDY. Fires that way. Picked off. Darius Leonard at the 5-yard line. Plants in the pocket. The Colts bring it down. A sack for Indianapolis. Steps up into the end zone. He throws. Michael Pittman. Touchdown.
From the Power Home Solar Studio, let's get the podcast started.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the Colts official podcast. We are presented to you by our friends at WynnBET, the official sportsbook partner of your Indianapolis Colts. My name is Jeffrey Gorman. Joining me as usual, Miss Lara Overton. She keeps us afloat. No sinking ships with her on board. And of course, JJ Stankovic. Hey, Lara, JJ is coming up on a one-year anniversary working for this franchise, coming from the Chicago area. We talked before the show today. He's coming up on 1 year, and I kind of like the addition. The kid's good.
Hey, he has been a fantastic addition. I mean, I can't tell you how grateful I am, especially that JJ has just adapted as we have been in kind of this wild season where it was like, okay, things are kind of back to normal, and no, that they're not, and hey, we're going to do this TV show in the studio, but then the next week we're going to do it on Zoom, and we're going to find all these ways to do all these different things. So I'm grateful that JJ has put up with all of my chaos and my erratic decisions when I'm like, hey, I have no idea we're going to make this work. And like, JJ's always there doing Horseshoe FAQ. We always have fun doing that segment. JJ, I know you, or Jeffrey, I know that you got to jump in and do an FAQ and you guys had a blast. I think that's one of the things there. Where I really value the addition of our friend JJ Stankovic is not only the quality of the content and all of the fantastic articles and all of that, but also like the personality and the comedy and all of that that you inject into not just our shows and our coverage, but also just into the department when we can sit. Well, some of my most fun has just been going over your desk and having like absurd off-topic questions to ask you. We end up bantering for like 30 or 40 minutes, and then JJ's like, yeah, I got to get back to something. I actually have work to do, and I've just taken totally off topic for close to an hour. Hey, like I do on this podcast.
This was very nice of you both to say on the record for people to hear. Y'all should have heard what they were saying about me when we weren't recording.
Good luck, man. That's what we're saying off the record is you heard Irsay the other day. He's making changes. We don't know what department that's in. You're a new guy. You don't even have a year under your belt. So I'm going to switch gears and say, hey, good luck making it into 2022, Stankovic.
Yeah, thanks, Jeffrey. You know, it's really nice to, you know, get laid off like 1 year ago almost to the day and then have it be joked about. Might not make it. Yeah. Right. All I did was move my family from Chicago to Indianapolis for a job that I love.
And Lara would tell you.
Yeah, you know. Yeah.
Lara would tell you.
But thank you, guys.
I'm a sweetheart.
Thank you, guys. And by the way, that episode of Horseshoe FAQ, I don't remember what day we did it, but Jeffrey, he did a Chris Reed imitation where on camera, he just goes like, gah, and like chops, and then says something about Dayo Odengbo farting, and I, like, that was it. It was over. It was
funny
done.
They didn't ask me back. Lara, why didn't you guys ask me back after that?
I think that's a question for Dave Knickerbocker. I'm not sure. That's above me,
yeah,
I think.
Oh, yeah, passing the buck there. All right.
JJ, we love you. We're glad you're here. Keep up the great work. You can follow JJ at JJ Stankovic on Twitter, at Lara Overton on Twitter, and, of course, on Colts.com, and download the Colts app to follow these two and what's the latest happenings in Colts camp. We'll get there. We got Mike Chappell coming up. He's from CBS4 and Fox 59. More importantly, he's been covering the Colts since 1984, so we'll chat to him about the Hall of Fame process and the look for Reggie Wayne. He knows. He's one of the few people on earth that knows who's going into this next Hall of Fame class. Will Reggie Wayne be the next one? We will find out, hopefully, knock on wood, with Mike Chappell. But guys, we love this game. Like Lara said, you know, I've been at JJ's side of his desk. I've been at the side of your desk talking about other games around the NFL in week 7 and week 4 and week 12. But what we saw this past weekend, and being football fans that we are, obviously not our Colts, we'd love to see that, but it started with the Bengals and Titans on Saturday afternoon and then went into the 49ers and Packers with Jimmy G bringing down Aaron Rodgers. I want to start with in Nashville. Did you guys see this happening with Joe Burrow?
I did to some degree because they have just been rolling with the momentum. I think that when you think about what tends to happen, the way that it plays out in regards to the parity of the NFL and especially in the playoffs, is that teams get on a roll and they just continue to build confidence. And that's what the Cincinnati Bengals have done consistently. So I felt like that it was playing to their advantage coming in, whereas Tennessee had had the week off. Of course, you get D. Henry back and all of that. But there was, to me, a tendency, which ended up playing out because both number one seeds went down where, like, you come out a little bit flat. I mean, obviously, both games were very competitive and all of that, so you can't say, you know, that they were flat for the entirety. But I did feel that momentum played a very heavy part in the Cincinnati Bengals' success going on the road, going into hostile territory in Nashville and capitalizing the way that they did. Now, I will say going into Kansas City is a completely different beast than there was going in to face the Titans at Nissan Stadium. That's going to be very interesting. That will be, you know, that will be something to be seen, that AFC Championship game, Bengals at Arrowhead facing the Chiefs. What is this, four straight AFC Championship appearances for the Chiefs?
First team
is that
in
right?
NFL history. Yeah, first team in NFL history to host four consecutive conference championships.
Going back to, like, Cincinnati really quickly, you guys, to me, like, the confidence of their young players is awesome. Like, the seeing, of course, Joe Burrow, you've seen it time and time, and that's nothing new. I mean, Joe Burrow on a national stage, winning a championship at LSU, right? But then the confidence that he has that resonates within the rest of this team, Ja'Marr Chase having the production, but then the rookie kicker apparently calls his shot and looks at Joe Burrow and just goes, takes a swing, you know, one little practice swing and goes, guess we're going to the AFC Championship game. I'm sorry, that is next level nasty natty swagger right there, and it is so fun to watch. I was all here for it.
I love a swaggy kicker. Love it. Absolutely love a swaggy kicker.
Evan Kickfierson, folks. Well, write that one down. I stole it off of the broadcast. Yeah.
Real quick, Lara, though, your point about Joe Burrow, like, the dude got sacked 9 times. Like, how many other quarterbacks in the NFL would just be like, not our day, and, you know, like, slump their shoulders and, you know, give off bad body language to their teammates because they're getting their butt kicked, like, you know, like Mathis and Freeney are rushing them on every single snap. Joe Burrow didn't do that. I mean, that was really incredible. Obviously, you hope he doesn't get, you know, you hope the number of sacks he takes is lower than his jersey number, but, right, like, for him to overcome that and win on the road against Tennessee, that was really, really impressive just from, like, a grit standpoint. They just beat the Chiefs a couple weeks ago. Wasn't all that long ago that he was, you know, Ja'Marr Chase is having 180 yards and three
Chiefs
touchdowns.
In the playoffs are different from the Chiefs in the regular season, in my opinion.
It is, but, like, hey, I'm not, the Chiefs will probably win, but, like, I'm not counting out Joe Burrow right now.
No, absolutely not. And it's almost, you mentioned the sacks. Isn't it almost like he's one of those, like, superheroes or something that, like, the more they get hit, the stronger they get? Like, it's like he somehow, like, gets better. Like, I almost feel like that he feeds off of it, where it's like, okay, I'm going to take that hit. All right, now I'm going to make you pay for it to some degree. So he is one of those young quarterbacks who is so fun to watch and is going to be fun to watch for a really long time. And dang it, I mean, Cincinnati has struggled for, like, so long. You're happy to see it. Another quote-unquote, like, smaller market Midwest team that I think you have a lot of people across the Midwest whose teams are currently out of contention. They're kind of rooting for this team right now, and I'm a little bit rooting for them because of the tie to the Colts being that Press Taylor's brother, Zach Taylor, is the head coach of the Bengals. So keeping it in the family.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you on that. Guys, I wanted to stay with Mike Vrabel. Did you happen to see his press conference afterwards?
I did not.
He said something along the lines of, like, maybe we had too many sacks, which was just the ultimate, like, I know he was getting a lot of flack for that, but, like, you're talking to a coach after a season that he probably thought could end with him getting a ring came crashing down. Like, I don't blame it. Like, whatever he said in there was probably coming from a place of emotion and frustration, not critical thinking. Like, I don't buy too much into that. Like, the dude was pissed off. He didn't come out and be like, you know, Joe Burrow sucks. Like, he was just, like, you know, frustrated that they lost when they had 9 sacks. Like, that shouldn't happen, but it did. I mean,
guys,
I don't blame him for that.
Yeah. If we talk about that before the game and say, hey, you're going to get 9 sacks this afternoon, you think you win or you lose, 100 out of 100 voters would say, yeah, we're going to win with 9 sacks. It didn't happen. And I loved what he said. He said, hey, maybe we have too many sacks. Maybe we have too many pass rushers. We need to get turnovers. We need to get balls punched out. We need to get picks. And I just thought it was kind of funny the way they were saying that, because there was no way they should have lost that game.
That's kind of funny. Isn't that the reverse of how some people feel about the Colts defense? Like, not enough sacks, but plenty of turnovers.
Tons of takeaways.
So, yeah.
Exactly. Hey, guys, real quick, I'm going around this league because we saw what we saw. Aaron Rodgers, another no playoff or Super Bowl season. He's been in the league a heck of a long time. A lot of people thought they were the number one seed at Lambeau hosting. And all people, Jimmy Garoppolo, of all people, comes in and beats the Packers. Did not see that coming. Did not see this 49ers run. What happened there?
Listen.
Debo Samuel? Jimmy G gets a lot of credit, but also, I mean, he has one of the most, like, just,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
awesome.
He's literally one of the most, I'm just trying to, like, even find words, like, the most threatening weapons in the entire league, that guy.
Listen, Jimmy Garoppolo and I are, we're both from the Chicago suburbs.
Okay,
Jimmy,
I like where this is going.
Jimmy is 30. I'm 32. Jimmy Garoppolo got to live out every Chicago kid's dream who grew up around the same time, you know, we did, of high-fiving Robbie Gould after he made a kick to beat the Packers in the playoffs. Who cares what team you're on? Like, Jimmy Garoppolo getting to see Robbie Gould hit a kick to beat the Packers and then go up and high-five him because he's his teammate. That, like, you're talking about living out, like, you know, I guess if you were maybe 20 years older than me, it would be like, you know, going to beat the Packers with, you know, like, you know, lifting Ditka up on your shoulders. Like, mm-hmm. Robbie Gould, guys, we did, at my old job at NBC Sports Chicago, we did a bracket of for the most popular Bear. This is in 2019, most popular Bears player ever. And we set it up so Robbie Gould, Alex Brown used to work for us, or does work for NBC Sports Chicago as a post-game analyst, played defensive end. And my friend and producer, Paul Aspen, set it up where Robbie Gould was going to go up against Alex Brown in the first round. We knew Robbie was going to win just to mess with AB. But then it was Robbie Gould versus Lance Briggs in the second round.
Uh-oh.
And Robbie smoked it. And we were just like, uh-oh, this is not good. Robbie Gould goes on to win the whole thing. He makes a video with Sister Jean from Loyola basketball fame.
Yeah, sure.
Promoting himself to win Chicago football madness on NBC Sports Chicago. He beats George Halas in the final, 20,000 votes to 5,000 votes. Robbie Gould, the most popular player in Chicago Bears history at that time. People in Chicago, like Wiener Circle in Chicago, is giving out free cheese fries because Robbie hit the game-winning kick. Like, people in Chicago lost their minds over that game because it was Robbie Gould knocking out Aaron Rodgers and the Packers.
Lara, hold on, one quick thing. Speaking of Chicago Bears legends, Dick Butkus is on Twitter now, and if you aren't following, get on board. Go along for the ride. So good. One of the best things in compliment to happen this weekend, aside from the divisional playoff games. Yes,
Lara,
Jeffrey.
We're gonna talk a lot of quarterback play. We're gonna talk that with Mike Chappell. You know, about what's going on in these playoffs, and people are talking about the greatness at the quarterback position of these remaining teams. But Lara, I throw to you. JJ, another thing you have in common with Jimmy Garoppolo, you both look the same. You're almost identical guys.
As far as looks go. Absolutely ridiculous.
No, I mean, Lara, back me up on this, Lara.
That is the most
false. Oh, those broodingly handsome good looks. Absolutely.
Oh, give me a break. The only other thing I have in common with Jimmy Garoppolo is that I assume we both prefer to put giardiniera on everything. You know, a good Italian boy from Rolling Meadows likes to put his giardiniera on everything.
But Lara, here's my point. An answer for me, just as a fan first and an analyst second. You know, quarterbacks win playoff games. Jimmy Garoppolo was 11-19 for 131 yards with a 57 rating. What's going on here with Jimmy G and these 49ers? And of all things, not getting that big time Mahomes, Josh Allen type of play against the Packers, but just grinding it out. Can that style win a Super Bowl?
I think it certainly can. I mean, they're still alive, so I guess you say, why can't they? And I mean,
it almost did 2 years ago.
Great point. It really almost did. I mean, if you're slaying the dragon that is the Green Bay Packers this year, the number one seed in the NFC, led by an eventual Hall of Famer, I think that certainly the argument could be made that you can win that way. And, you know, one of the ways that San Francisco has done it is up front. You know, they've got a great defense. That was put on display in a number of situations and being able to stifle some of the production from that Green Bay offense. So, yeah, I think that, you know, it's for the majority of the games we saw, we watched, you know, Mahomes and Allen battle it out with just absolutely elite, absurd quarterback play. I mean, and not just with their arms, just their overall athleticism of those guys. And then also, you talk about the Tampa Bay LA game when, of course, you have Tom Brady. Stop me if you've heard this before. Tom Brady, you know, launches a comeback, you know, to tie it up late and, you know, have the Bucs incredible on the brink of, you know, yet another historic comeback. But the play that, you know, for all of the criticism that has surrounded the career of Matthew Stafford, hey, can't win the big games, you know, all of that based on his career. I'm not saying I said that. That's the national narrative surrounding Matthew Stafford because of, you know, his tenure in Detroit. But that game, that situation, when it came down to it and it was, you know, him to oh my gosh, guys, Cooper Kupp. I was like blank Cooper for a second. Kupp. Yeah, making that clutch, incredible throw. Yeah, there are a lot of times it does come down to those handful of plays. Jeffrey, you mentioned all the time, you know, it's five plays. But in the situation that we saw this weekend, it was one play that changed everything for each of those teams. And so I think that it is interesting that the Niners, I don't want to say they're an anomaly in this, but they certainly are more so of the outlier of the final four teams remaining in that Jimmy G is a strong quarterback. I don't know that you would consider him elite. Obviously, he's not on that same tier that you would have for Mahomes or for Joe Burrow or, you know, any other guys. You know, it's very interesting to see. And I think Matt Stafford proved himself elite because of the type of throws that he made late to win that game. Mm-hmm.
Great call. JJ, you know about this. I'm going to bring up Stafford again real quick because he did what he did for over a decade in Detroit with no success. But then you put him in this wheelhouse, this offensive juggernaut that he has out there. Listen, call me crazy, but this team, hopefully, and I know they're like in win now mode, but this him going to the Rams could put Matthew Stafford in the Hall of Fame. I'm saying it. That's with a win or two over the next couple of years. I'm so giddy about this because I followed Stafford's career. I was born in Detroit, so I've always been an outlier Detroit fan. Loved the kid forever. And to see what he's doing now with the ridiculous throws that he's been doing as well, he's an elite quarterback. And I'm just saying he's in a position now where a lot of fans in the Midwest are happy for Stafford to see him with such a great offensive unit, not the Lions.
Oh, 100%. I mean, also, by the way, like I'm with you on Matthew Stafford as a potential Hall of Famer. Like he goes and he wins the Super Bowl this year. I mean, it's crazy. He's only been to a Pro Bowl once. I think that's what you get when you play in Detroit.
Right.
But look, Matthew Stafford has been a really good quarterback for a really long time.
Oh, gosh,
and he's played for the Detroit Lions. You know, you talk about Stafford, that narrative layer that he can't win the big game. Well, Stafford was 0-3 in the playoffs with the Lions when they were over a touchdown underdog in all three of those games. Like, they had no chance. They made the playoffs. Cool, that's great. They had no chance to win in the playoffs. Stafford coming in, I mean, yeah, he throws some interceptions that you're just like, I can't believe you just made that decision. But then he makes some throws where you're like, I can't believe you just made that throw. He, to me, like, the marriage with McVay and in that offense has been such an impressive one. That, you know, look, they beat the 49ers. I think the best version of the Super Bowl this year is Rams-Chiefs.
Ooh.
And, you remember a couple of years ago that Rams-Chiefs game. Yeah. That was Jared Goff putting up all those numbers. And, you know, no slight to Jared Goff, but Matthew Stafford's a better quarterback than him. And if we get that matchup, oh man.
Right.
Like, give me Mahomes versus Stafford, Jalen Ramsey, and, you know, Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. By the way, that.
And Aaron Donald?
Yeah, right. Just the best player in football that I didn't
mention. Him in.
Thanks, Lara. Yep.
I'm here for the big guys. I got to make sure the big guys are represented up there.
Listen, one quick thing, though, I want to talk about with that Rams Bucks game. Mm-hmm. That might be the last time we see Tom Brady play. I'm sure everyone's noticed
I'm not
this kind
buying
of bubble
it.
Up.
Bite your tongue, Stankovic.
Listen, I said might. But you notice this bubble up of chatter. And one of the guys who started it was Jeff Darlington from ESPN, who maybe is the most well-connected reporter with Tom Brady's camp. He was the one who was saying for weeks before Tom Brady left New England a couple years ago that Brady was going to leave. And everyone was like, I don't buy it. He's going to come back. And Darlington's like, he's going to move on. So when Jeff Darlington says there's a chance Tom Brady's considering retirement, and you read some of the comments he told Jim Gray about wanting to spend more time with his wife and his kids, you kind of wonder. Tom Brady, when he made his NFL debut, when he threw his first pass in the NFL, it was November 2000. I was 11 years old. Think about everything that's happened in your life listening to this that's happened in the last 21 years. How much joy there's been, how much grief there's been, how, you know, maybe, you got married, you had an accomplishment. Like, just think about how much your life has changed since Tom Brady threw his first pass in the NFL. How crazy is that?
Hold on, though. Here's what I'm going to say real quick. And I get it. There's a lot of questions for Tampa Bay. You got guys who are injured. Will they come back? Won't they come back? What's Gronk's future? What's, you know, Godwin? All of these guys, different things going on. However, there is no one better, I would say, in all of sports than making himself a headline even after a loss when he is completely irrelevant than Tom Brady. Tom Brady will generate press surrounding himself even after a debacle of, you know, a finish like that. I mean, a debacle just because they weren't able to pull it off after all that he did to bring them back. I just have a really hard time that he did that much to bring that team back in to a game where they could have sent themselves to another NFC Championship to walk away right then. There is nothing about his performance that says that Tom Brady is not able to perform at peak level. I don't know. I just think that this is Tom Brady perfectly executing. He's controlling his narrative. He's going to keep the conversation driving around him and make sure he is front page on ESPN and NFL Network and Good Morning Football and Get Up. And every single day, every single conversation will surround Tom Brady for the foreseeable future. That's one of the things that he is best at, besides, of course, mounting double-digit comebacks and being the greatest quarterback of all time and all of those things. But to me, that's all this is. It's PR.
Okay. Well, I personally do think he's going to be back, talking with a couple of my friends down in Tampa. Guy who used to work for us in Clyde Christensen and stuff. And
yeah,
nothing,
talk about guys really well connected. That's our Jeffrey Gorman right there.
No. I'm just saying, like, I haven't talked to Clyde at depth about Brady or anything like that. But I'm just saying, like, what he's been talking through this year and what they still have on that roster and what Bruce Arians can do with that healthy offense, keyword healthy, and potentially Gronk coming back in a specific role where Gronk plays a total of 9 games, but all playoff games type of thing. I don't see him I see him coming back next year and saying, hey, let's make one more run with this thing, especially with B.A. and Azir and Clyde.
I'm with you.
So, yeah, that's what I feel. And I know what you're saying. Hey, family first, the kids got to have their dad and stuff like that. But they're a different sort of a family, you know, worldwide known. They can't go anywhere on earth without being mobbed. And that includes safaris in the Outer Banks. It doesn't matter where they're going to be, on front page, whatever they do. I just think he's in that environment where he says, hey, I still got 2 good seasons in this arm. Let me run it.
Something else really quickly for me is, like, it's not like when Tom Brady walks away from football, his workload is just going to evaporate. He has his hands. He has so many business ventures and so many other things. I would argue that even when he walks away from football, he might end up working more because he's got this new apparel brand that he launched. He's got all the TB12 stuff. He's going to be everyone is going to be pursuing him for every media. I mean, he's already got the Man in the Arena going and all of those different things. So yeah, that, the thing about, oh, he wants more time with his family, that ain't going to happen when he stops playing, because he's still going to be doing 100,000 things. I mean, I think when you talk to Peyton, he would say that. Like, certainly he has more autonomy over his schedule maybe now, but I would say he probably works just about as much, because that's just who he is engineered to be. So I think it is foolish to think like, oh, Tom's going to kick back and he's just going to, you know, not do anything for 2 years and just, you know, go to soccer games and watch his daughter play volleyball and that. Like, no chance. Come on. Also, Giselle's very, very career driven and she's got her things going on. So I don't know. Yeah. That's something to keep in mind.
Lara, I don't think he keeps them hanging, JJ. I don't really. I think he says, you know, in the next couple of weeks, he's saying, yeah, I'm in. I'm not, you know, just to have the ship going in the right direction.
Absolutely.
Not having that cloud hang over that complex for months at a time, saying, will Tom come back? Will he not? I don't think he's that type of guy. So I think we'll hear something sooner or later. So that game led into this game. By the way, Mike Chappell coming up. We're going to talk Reggie Wayne Hall of Fame chances as well as what we saw with the last quarter of the Colts season. He's coming up from CBS4 and Fox 59. But first and foremost, Lara, I want to start with you because I you know, turn down the volume here, because we watched that Rams-Buccaneers game. We followed it up with Bills and Chiefs. And I thought, I'm just going to throw this out there and let you guys go. With there was a two-minute warning with six timeouts left between both teams, I called it right there. I not called it, but I said, oh boy, are we going to see some fireworks here? 2 minutes left with these two quarterbacks, and they have all their timeouts left. Lara, did you have enough breath in your lungs to watch that game?
I mean, you guys, it was so wild. And I don't have, like, a rooting interest in either of these teams.
Sure.
I was just rooting for outstanding football. And, you know, having been able to, you know, go to Buffalo and see firsthand that team play, and then having, you know, been in Kansas City watching the Chiefs play at points in my tenure working here, you know, you have a good perspective on each of those teams. I mean, I was just like a crazy, rabid football fan. Like, I couldn't sit down. I was pacing. Like, Dan was like watching me like, you're insane, right? He's like, I would have swore like you were like Travis Kelce's mom, good old Donna Kelce, who hopped on the Zoom call, you know, was asking questions like she was part of the media, which was outstanding. That was the week prior, but I still loved the moment so much. I mean, you would have thought that's how invested I was in the outcome, that I had, like, you know, family attachment to it, just because it was so thrilling. And it was like the perfect way to finalize that whole weekend of what was just such great football all around, and like all three phases football. I mean, kickers, it coming down to, you know, field goals in three of those games, just insane. And then that game was so much fun to watch, some of the just absurd throws that each of those guys were making. Like, I just, it was so much fun. I was just jumping. I mean, I was jumping up and down. And like, the thing was, it wasn't like I was rooting for one team or another. I was jumping up and down because I was losing my mind at some of the plays and the turn of events. And then, you know, the Bills taking the lead, but leaving 13 seconds on the clock and, you know, giving, I mean, Patrick Mahomes, you can leave that man no time. Like, and they had clearly, you know, like they had enough time to get it done. And then it comes down to the coin toss. And then you're debating. It's like, oh my God, are these overtime rules? And there's that debate that goes into it. I just think that it was, to me, one of the most memorable weekends of football that I've had purely as a fan, like, you know, removed from any of the experiences working in the NFL. It was really, really freaking fun and just made me really excited to watch this championship weekend go forward.
You know,
JJ,
what I loved
talk
about that?
It.
Go ahead. Yeah, the end of that Chiefs-Bills game, so the 13 seconds where, you know, Mahomes hits that completion to Tyreek Hill. He kind of gets him closer. You're thinking, all right, they're in Hail Mary range. There's no way they can get into field goal range. And I saw this after the game that Mahomes and Kelce kind of just said, all right, like, Travis, just run where there's grass. Like, it wasn't a designed route. It wasn't schemed.
Backyard football.
It was just two of the best freaking players in the NFL saying, let's go. And, like, I love that. Like, there's so much you can do to scheme up offense and to create opportunities for your quarterback. But there's something to be said for, hey, just get open. Just go get open. Like, you're playing out in the park, like you said, Lara. Like, backyard football. That's awesome.
I'm sorry, the quote from Andy Reid to Patrick, when it's Grimm, be the Grim Reaper? Are you kidding me? Like, Lara, that's iconic. That? Like, put that on the side of Arrowhead Stadium,
Oh, my gosh. Lara, JJ, you guys are well-versed and educated than I'll ever be. Is that his quote, or did that come from, like, some book or Disney film?
I've never heard that ever. Let's see. Also, I don't think Andy Reid needs to steal content from anyone. If you hear some of his press conferences, I mean, he has all sorts of just absolute gems in press conferences. He had one after the game last weekend. I can't remember.
About chocolate cake?
The chocolate cake. Thank you. It's a lot of his great quotes are food related, which I wholeheartedly appreciate. Yeah. I really love that. But yeah, I don't think that he's having to plagiarize anything. When you are Andy Reid and you just have this like gift that he does. I mean, as incredible of a football coach as he is equal parts wordsmith in my mind.
JJ.
I just did a quick Google search for it, Jeffrey. That sounds like it's Andy Reid's quote.
Wow. Sounds like it. All right. More will be revealed on that. But really quick, if you're a Buffalo Bills fan and like you're getting ready for, you know, the next week's game after no way can Josh come bring us back. Yes, he can. Oh, my gosh. We're going to the AFC Championship game. You're making plans with the family and the friends while the game is still has time on the clock. I mean, again, Buffalo decimated by a tragic loss. If you're a Bills fan right now, obviously you're happy about the future and what you have in the quarterback. But I'm sorry, man. These gut-wrenching losses that have happened through the years – something about ghosts, you know what I'm saying? Something about ghosts in the NFL. This feels ultimately like another huge letdown for the Buffalo Bills franchise, obviously, with four Super Bowl trips and not a one win.
Wait, but did you see the welcoming committee at the Buffalo airport when the team got there?
Tell me.
Hundreds of fans showed up with signs to welcome the Bills home and celebrate the season that they had and the absolute battle that they had just come home from, that they lost in Kansas City. But that fan base, to me, knows the future is incredibly bright and that this is a team is going to be in contention. Yeah, of course, there's disappointment. But I just thought that was really telling about this fan base to do that. I mean, I think it was like 3 a.m. Maybe when they showed up. JJ, I don't know if you can search for it really quickly and see. Like, there was an article that had, I mean, there are images all over. I saw them shared on Twitter. I mean, fans, just thrones of fans showing up to welcome that team home. And I thought that was really telling just about the character. I mean, I respect the heck out of the Buffalo Bills fans and all of that. But
guys, they got the number one ranked defense in the NFL and the kid hung 42 on them. I mean, in the divisional playoff, I mean, like, how great. Your chips are lying right in front of you saying, I got a top ranked defense and a top quarterback, and that happens. They take their lungs out. I mean, put a fist in their chest and rip the hearts out of that. I'm saying number one defense included. It's like, boy, they're on a good path right now, Lara, but oh boy, losers lose, and I just don't like the mentality going on of big games, these guys coming up short. I hope we don't have that with the Bills and Josh Allen.
Listen,
I don't know. I mean, Mahomes went to Josh Allen after, and if you see it, he sprinted to find, you know, the Chiefs are celebrating, and Mahomes broke away from all of his teammates and sprinted distance of the field to go and hunt down Josh Allen to hug him and, you know, congratulate him on a great season or whatever. But he said, we're going to do this a lot. And I thought that was such a cool moment. But yeah, you never take for granted having that special of a team getting that far and not being able to see it through the finish line. Jace.
Watch it. You can look at it online. Watch the final 2 minutes of that game. Watch the final 3.5 minutes of that game. You'll be able to watch it forever and ever. One of the greatest games in the NFL. JJ, you were saying something before I so unapologetically cut you off.
Well, it's just the mentality of the team. Like, it's great, you know, that fans welcomed him back, and like, you know, Bills fans are awesome. Like, yeah, I'm with you guys, but this team was built to beat the Chiefs, like you said, you know, you got these two great safeties in Poyer and Hyde, and you've got this great, I mean, great quarterback and great like, we haven't even mentioned Gabriel Davis probably having the best game a wide receiver's had in playoff history.
Oh my gosh.
Like, but
he was breaking ankles in the Colts or in the Bills secondary or in Chiefs secondary.
But like, to get here and then to lose, like, I can't fathom how crushing that is when I think you feel like if you won that game, you're going to win the Super Bowl, and you lose it. And now you're not even playing on championship weekend. I mean, this team, that a lot of those players are going to be back next year. They're a pretty stacked team going into 2022. But like you said, it's not the same. I mean, you know, you're going to get Tre'Davious White back. That's great. Will there be other injuries that you have to deal with? You know, you're going to have some other attrition here and there with a guy leaving or getting injured or whatever it may be. The core's there, but that special, you know, how close a team is to winning, it's not always a given that they'll be right back. Some teams it is. I mean, you think about the Chiefs in 2018, they lost in the same manner the Bills just did to the Chiefs. That Mahomes had that great season, they get the AFC Championship game, 31-31 after 60 minutes, they lose the coin flip, Tom Brady goes down, Patriots win. Mahomes doesn't even touch the ball. And you're thinking, man, like, is it really going to be the same? And it has been for the Chiefs, because they won the Super Bowl the next year. But it's not always the case. Like, we talk a lot about Josh Allen being the exception to the rule with young quarterbacks, how it's probably not super responsible for a team that has a young quarterback that's struggling to be like, well, look at Josh Allen. It's not super responsible for a team to be like, we'll be back next year. Just run it back. The Bills are going to have to make some changes. They're going to have to do some things differently, and it might not be the same. And they have a really damn good quarterback who can take them wherever they want to go, but it's not always a given, is just what I'm saying.
Congratulations to the Buffalo Bills. Mike Chappell's coming up from Fox 59 and CBS 4. We're going to talk some Hall of Fame and current Colts status as far as what this team is up to. But one thing on the Bills before we go to Chap, congratulations to Terry and Kim Pegula, the owners of the Bills, and their daughter Jessica, who went to the quarterfinals of the Australian Open tennis tournament. She is one of the best players in the world. They have a great football team. Life is good for the Pegulas right now. So a big congratulations on behalf of the Colts to Jessica Pegula for getting to the quarters of the Australian Open. That's the equivalent of our very own Kaylin Ursay being in the quarterfinals of the Australian Open, and we would just be ecstatic. The whole show would be about tennis.
Hey, we'd be there, right? We'd just do the podcast from there.
Yeah, we'd be covering it.
We'd just go down under. Yeah.
I love it. All right. So
I'm in. Let's go to Australia.
That'd be great. We can't even get to Houston to cover some games, let alone Australia. I mean, we'll figure that out when the time's right. Okay, let's not waste any more time. Coming in from Fox 59 and CBS 4, covering the Colts since 1984, a long time with the Indy Star, Fox 59, CBS 4 sports member, and also a voting member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame Selection Committee. We will get into that, and current Colts who are up for enshrinement potentially this year. But let's say hello to Mike Chappell. How are you, Mike? Appreciate the time.
Good. How are you guys doing?
Well, after doing that fantastic.
After that weekend of NFL football, Chap, I want to start there. Lara and JJ and I have been going giddy, as well as everybody else has, after what we just witnessed this past weekend when it comes to the NFL. Mike Chappell, a long time covering this game, the quarterback play that we saw in the last 2 days, over the past weekend, rather, remarkable. I haven't seen a weekend of football like that in a long time. I want your take on that and what you saw this past weekend.
Yeah, I can't remember. I mean, you know, walk-off weekend, when all the games, you know, is the walk-off homer, which is incredible. And what really struck me, and it's not necessarily a great thing for the local football base, is the young quarterbacks in the AFC that you think, wow, these guys are – it kind of reminds me back in the day when you had the Marinos and the Elways and Kellys, and they were the young guns, and they did it for a long, long time. You look at these guys, and gosh, so many young quarterbacks who do special things. I know there's a lot of talk about the overtime rule, and should Josh Allen have gotten a chance, they might have played forever. They might have just kept trading touchdowns. So, but it's amazing. And I've seen some things where the ratings were through the roof on some of these games. And it just proves to me that the NFL, that they could put their two worst teams out there on a Wednesday evening, and people would watch. People watch the Pro Bowl, which is basically, you know, just a non-event. And it's usually a very highly rated event. So then when you get the ingredients that they had here with, you know, how often or how seldom do games fail to live up to the hype? All of these did, and they even exceeded it, which is, it was truly an amazing weekend.
Chap, I joked on Twitter. I said, hey, with no Monday night games scheduled, we should just play this Bills-Chiefs game again. You know, create a series out of this game. I couldn't have had enough quarters of that. And when you look to, you know, these are teams that the Indianapolis Colts have tons of familiarity with. Of course, have faced the Buffalo Bills, just faced them this past regular season, faced them in the playoffs last year. Beat the Kansas City Chiefs just a few seasons ago there in Arrowhead on Sunday Night Football. Given what you are seeing from each of those franchises, how tough is it going to be for teams in the near future within the AFC? And how frustrating is it for the Colts knowing that you went to Buffalo, dominated that Bills team, and then you see what they did against Kansas City and made every effort they could to have certainly contended in the AFC Championship game?
Yeah, I hear people say the Colts winning in Buffalo was a fluke. Well, no, it wasn't. They went in there and they punched them in the mouth and they won. Let's not diminish what the Colts did. I mean, come on. But again, what it does, it just shows you kind of what the bar is going to be competitive. And I remember back in the day with the Mannings and all this and how they had trouble getting over the hump with New England, and people said, well, you got to build your team to win in New England. You know, the Colts had that fast-track team that played indoors, and to think you're going to build your team to win one game in New England was ridiculous. But you just have to look at how this is going. It's a quarterback league. It is, and it always will be. And what the Colts are trying to do a little bit is go against the grain by being a run-centric team. And as Chris Ballard told us, it worked for Tennessee for several years with Derrick Henry. But, you know, the issue is then you need at least competent play at quarterback to where he makes those four or five plays, not the ridiculous Madden throws that Mahomes and Allen made, but make those plays on third and six or whatever to where your formula works, which it didn't work the last 2 weeks where, for whatever the reasons were, the Colts just couldn't sustain things and get the job done. But it's just kind of scary how you look at the way these teams are built. Even in the NFC with the Rams, although they were sort of different because they weren't built that way. They were put together that way. But it's just crazy. People say, well, you need to go out and get your Mahomes or Allen or Burrow. Oh, really? You know, what store is that? I'll go online and you know, I'll try to get me a couple of those guys. So that's the problem is you know what you need to get. It's just hard to get it.
Well, the other thing is you have to be in a position draft-wise to get one of those guys. They're not just going to come available in free agency. I mean, they're so few. They're so rare, which is why they're so thrilling to watch. Putting yourself in a position to even be able to vie for one of those guys is so difficult because you almost have to have at least a season or several seasons where you're not competitive to put yourself in that situation of being high enough draft position to grab them.
Well, that's what happened for like 25 years. With Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck, things had to fall into place in the 98 draft in 97. You know, you had to lose in Minnesota and you had to have things happen out in Arizona to be in position. And then you had to have the bad season to get the first pick. And then it had to fall into place in 2011 with Peyton Manning not playing. And then you had the worst record and you take Luck. I remember that. What struck me was that year in 2012, the Colts had the worst record, and they take Andrew Luck. I think they were 3-13 or 2-12. The records blur, but then the very next year, Kansas City has got the worst record, and they take Eric Fisher, a left tackle. Well, it's all about time and place, and we always joke that you know Jim Irsay really made the deal because he got two, you know, franchise quarterbacks for a long time. You wish that Luck would have stuck around longer, obviously, but it's time and place. It just, you know, Kansas City had the right record, the worst record, but there wasn't a quarterback there worthy of it. And if you don't get that guy, it's just hard. It's hard. I've seen some things now where people said, well, you know, the Colts should have taken Josh Allen instead of Quentin Nelson. In 2018, they had Andrew Luck. And he went on to have a great season. I mean, that would have been ridiculous. Now, we can argue whether you take another position, But to take Josh Allen, who wasn't considered a slam dunk, you know, lottery quarterback anyway, but it just shows you how everything the league and interest is driven by the quarterback. And if you got one, you're lucky. And if you don't, you can compete, but it's just hard. Things have to fall into place, and you have to be on point with so many things. I remember back in the Manning years, we always did these projections on what their record was going to be. And with Manning, you start 10-6. When you've got that guy, it's 10-6. And then it's if things fall into place, 11 wins or 12 wins, and if they really fall into place, 13 or 14. That's what that quarterback does. He gives you a chance every game. Tom Brady, it was 27-13 in the fourth quarter, but he gave you a chance. Yeah, yes, things had to happen, but that guy gives you a chance every game.
Chap, I'm really glad to have you on for a number of reasons, but you know, after the weekend of football that we saw and that Chiefs-Bills game, I saw a lot of people saying this is the early stages of Manning versus Brady in Mahomes versus Allen. You covered every year of Manning versus Brady here in Indianapolis. Do you agree with that? That we're seeing the early stages, or is there so much other quarterback talent in the league, whether it's Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, specifically in the conference, that it maybe won't be Mahomes versus Allen every year?
That's a good point, because again, Joe Burrow, I mean, he's pretty impressive too. Nine sacks and you win a game, really. But I see what they're saying. But again, will they always be in a division or a championship game? I don't know. But that's what's cool is you've got the makings of that. And what makes it even better is you've got, oh, by the way, we've got three or four other quarterbacks, Justin Herbert. You know, like you said, Lamar Jackson, Burrow. So that's what's amazing. So I don't know that you're going to see the Chiefs and Bills always – in that game, but I just think it's cool that these guys are young, and in most cases their supporting cast is young, and bring it on. I mean, like Laura said, let them play again Monday night. I just sat and watched it, and I just think it's kind of cool that in the NFL, like I said, the NFL is such a product that they could throw scrub teams out there and people would watch, and then you put these people out there. I think it's amazing, and to see the young quarterbacks in a quarterback-driven league excelling like that, it's just going to be fun to watch. But, no, I can see the comparisons, and I don't think people got tired of Brady Manning. I really don't. And then, of course, then you had Roethlisberger in there along the way as well, so you had a lot of great quarterbacks during that time.
We're watching it right now during the NFL playoffs. That's Mike Chappell. Follow him on Twitter at mchappell51. I want to figure out what that 51 is later on in the show, Chap. But mchappell51 on Twitter. You had a chance somehow, some way, to connect with the owner of the Colts, Jim Irsay, after the Jacksonville loss, and that preceded by the Vegas loss. What did you take away from your chat with the owner as far as his mentality, his temperament? And we've seen on social media, they're not done, or he's not done. He says we're going to work tirelessly to figure this out. What are you getting from the owner this time of year, Mike Chappell?
He's furious. He was furious and angry and frustrated and disappointed and motivated. One thing that I think Chris Ballard pointed out, and it's very true, about, he said, we embarrassed ourselves, our owner, and our city. And as you guys know, don't embarrass Jim Irsay or his brand, his family business. That's cardinal rule number one. And to sit there and lose to a 2-14 Jacksonville team, I don't want to hear how well they were moving. Baloney. They were 2-14. They got beat by 40 the week before. That's inexcusable. I talked to him for about 40 minutes, and unfortunately, I can only write about 3 minutes of it because everything else was way off the record. But it just reaffirmed to me his drive and passion and commitment to have this team relevant, and you know, to be uncompetitive in that game really, really steamed him. and he's going to do whatever it takes to ensure that doesn't happen again, whatever it takes. And I think he again, as everyone mentioned, him calling in Frank and Chris after a game, after a loss like that, that just doesn't happen. You normally have the old, you know, 10-minute cooling off period or 24-hour, whatever you want to call it. But he just had to get some things off his chest, and he did. And we'll see where this thing goes. But to think that status quo is going to rule is wrong. You don't say major changes and then sit on your thumb. So they'll do something. But from my talk with him, he was very upset. You know, one thing that I've learned with Jimmy over the years is he does get mad. He gets furious. But then he realizes that the worst time to make a major decision, a franchise-altering decision, whatever, is when you're mad. You just don't. You know, go in your office and sit in steam and put some curse words into the air if you want to, but then you have to settle down and make level-headed decisions based on what you know and what you believe and not what your heart's telling you to do. So, again, I'm sure there was a time after that game, maybe on the plane ride home, that he was really, really steamed. And I'm sure he still was when Chris and Frank were in the room, but you don't make decisions on anything, whether it's, you know, stuff in your home or your business or whatever. You don't make those decisions when you're just irate. You let things sort of settle down, and I think he's pretty good at that.
Chap, there's a lot to look forward to in the coming weeks. Pro Bowl's coming up. The Colts have, you know, it started with 7 Pro Bowlers and added a couple, you know, with alternates and all of those things, and could still have some movement in that roster based on, you know, going into this conference championship weekend, could see more people, more names. And then found out recently Reggie Wayne is going to be one of the coaches. So it'll be an exciting few weeks, and we'll get into the Hall of Fame talk here shortly. But when you mentioned, you know, that cooling off period, and we heard Chris talk about having the autopsy postseason, and you alluded to it, and you know, there have to be things addressed when you have a collapse that we witnessed. Did you get a good sense of maybe where this will begin in terms of, we know we have Matt Eberflus interviewing for jobs, Ed Dodds, Morocco Brown, all of those guys interviewing for positions. Outside of that, do you think there are other imminent moves, or what are the areas that you feel are the priority to be addressed as we go into a critical free agency period and then on into the draft?
Yeah, that's one of the awkward things is when you talk to the owner and he takes you way off the record. I mean, way off the record, and you sort of know what they're going to do, and you can't really talk about it or write about it. So yeah, I know what they want to do, and I know pretty much what they're going to do. So things don't stay the same. The problem is, you know, you've got issues this roster is really, really put together pretty well as far as core players, core pieces. But the problem is you've got instability at quarterback. And Chris mentioned that. We've got to get more stability at quarterback. But if Frank's had a different starter in all 4 seasons, that's ridiculous. You can't grow as a team doing that. You've got a question at left tackle. You've got questions at edge pass rusher. You know, Quiddy Pay looks like he's going to be a pretty good player, but even Chris mentioned they maybe should have had a veteran guy opposite him. You need better weapons at receiver, whether it's Carson Wentz or whomever at quarterback. Again, you've got to have better weapons. And your cornerbacks are probably not going to re-sign Xavier Rhodes. So the problem is as strong as this roster is, the issues they have are at key places. When, you know, when you're building a team, when you're just building a team from scratch, you're thinking, okay, I need quarterback, I need a left tackle, I need edge pass rusher, I need maybe a stud receiver, I need a stud corner. Well, that's what this team needs. You know, never mind that you got the offensive line together, and oh, by the way, you're going to have to pay a king's ransom on an extension for Quentin Nelson. It's just, you know, I totally understand and sort of buy into Chris's roster building, you know, strong up front, defense line, offensive line, and all that. But I think that they've somehow in this offseason got to solve the edge stuff with an edge pass rusher and a receiver. And not having a first-round pick really makes it tough. It does. I think they can go out in free agency and solve one of their issues, maybe two if you get a second-tier corner. I don't know. But you're going to have to – they're tired of short-term fixing quarterback, left tackle. They don't want that. Now, as again, Chris mentioned that if they have to, they will, but that's not what they want to see a quarterback. You need to have the guy there. When you don't have that guy there and you're always searching, you're almost like Cleveland or Jacksonville or somebody who – and look how that's gone for those people. You don't want to get into the quarterback carousel that the Colts are on right now.
Chapa, speaking of things that you can't totally talk about, you spent 7.5 hours on a Zoom talking about Hall of Fame candidates recently, didn't you?
Yes. I was sworn to as much secrecy in that as I was with Jim Irsay. I tell you what I'll do.
Exactly.
Just to get this out of the way, and I did this on a radio earlier. I will blink once if Reggie got in, and I'll blink twice if he didn't. So you ready? So there you go.
Well, That's great. Just in general, though, when you look at this Hall of Fame class and the 15 finalists, and Reggie being a third-time finalist, and Marvin Harrison getting in on his third time being a finalist, what made Reggie, again, such a compelling player to be considered for the Pro Football Hall of Fame selection committee?
Well, the way it works, again, each guy in that player's market gets 5 minutes to present him, and then there's long dialogue back and forth with people. And my 5 minutes, I just let off. I said, you know, the defining issue in Reggie Wayne's career is he is one of only two players who rank in the top 10 in regular season yards and receptions and postseason yards and receptions. And the other one is Jerry Rice. You know, and this is all about – the Hall of Fame is all about, you know, did you check the boxes? Super Bowl, All-Pro, Pro Bowls, yes. But did you do it for a long period of time? And Reggie did it for 14 years. Were you one of the best at your position over a long period of time? Reggie was. During his career, that 14-year career, from 2001 to 14, he led the league in receptions and yards for 14 years. I mean, of all the players that played during that stretch. So it's I told somebody once, I hope this comes out right. I always said I could make a stronger case for Reggie Wayne in the Hall of Fame than Edgerrin James, even though I think Edgerrin is a tad more of a better candidate, only because of Reggie's postseason. When you're third or fourth all time postseason in receptions, and fourth or fifth or sixth, whatever it is, in yards, I mean, that's just crazy. That means that when it got to be the stakes were the highest, you played at a high level. I think he had that 221 yards against Denver in 2003 or 2004. That's like the fourth highest total ever. So it just baffles me. First of all, I'm still not over the fact that it took Marvin 3 years to get in. That still amps me up pretty bad that Marvin had to wait 3 years. I'm still not over that. But I just look at Reggie's resume, and it is so spotless as far as what you want and what a Hall of Famer is. And that's what bothers me is what else? What's missing? What do you want? And, you know, he led the league in receiving 1 year. And I just look at the total body of work and the 1,000-yard seasons and things like that. I just don't know what people want that are still hesitant, that have been hesitant on Reggie. And, again, we had about a 20-minute debate on Reggie. And it was one of the third or fourth longest debates, which is not it's not a bad thing. It just means there was – because once – keep in mind, there's the 15 players this year. Three of them were receivers. It was Reggie, Andre Johnson. This is his first year, and then Torrey Holt.
Hey, Mike, do those debates
– I think lead into it.
Do those debates get heated? You just talked about it, and you spent 15 to 20 minutes on it. And Reggie's your guy. I mean, you're the ambassador for Reggie Wayne, Edger and James, Marvin Harrison, Peyton Manning, etc. Do those debates get heated, somebody like Reggie?
No, but there have been times that they have gotten heated. Terrell Owens,
right.
back several years. That heat, I don't say heated, we weren't throwing chairs, but there was some pretty spirited debate, and with Terrell Owens, it was like what might be conceived as off-field stuff, which is supposed to not count, but he was like suspended and traded several times, you know, the best player. So that his character did enter into it. Not with Reggie. No, it was just, again, it gets to be what flavor do you like? I mean, because when you look at Andre Johnson and Holt and Reggie, boy, they are so close. They really are. And which do you prefer? And I could argue, if I had to argue for Andre Johnson, I could argue as strong for him as I do for Reggie. Now, I think Reggie's had a better career. You know, and it's not Reggie's fault that he had Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck for a long time, and Andre Johnson's best quarterback with Matt Schaub. That's not Reggie's fault. It's, you know,
right.
We didn't dock Andre Reed because he had Jim Kelly for all those years. So that shouldn't matter. But it's just which receiver type do you like? And, you know, that's why the debate went on as long as it did. We didn't have nearly as long a debate with Devin Hester, because he was the only special teams guy. So it's just the makeup of the room as far as the 15 players. And hopefully we'll get this, you know, bottleneck, this pipeline of receivers going again, because once you get three or four receivers in a room at a time, somebody's waiting. And that's what happened with Marvin. You know, his first year, you know, Andre Reed got in ahead of him. And I stood up the next year and I said, I thought we were supposed, and this, I shouldn't have done this because I cost Marvin votes, but I said, I thought we were supposed to put in the five best players. And you're telling me that if you've got Marvin Harrison on one hand and Andre Reed on the other, Andre Reed's better? Well, then I was told I lost the Buffalo vote. So I never went that route again. But you just kind of have to watch what you say and say what you mean.
Okay, Chap, since we're talking about debates here, I have two. And the first one I'm going to go to, so we were on a Zoom call because, of course, latter part of the season, we were all just on Zoom. So while we would sit there and wait for Coach or whoever it was that particular day, we'd have a little bit of banter. And I got Chap on a bit of a rant, and it was great. It was so much fun. So can you explain for people that not every franchise market is represented in the Hall of Fame voting?
There we go.
And just how ludicrous this is, and how biased that is, that you don't have all 32 teams of the organizations represented in the Hall of Fame voting.
Well, no, wait. It's all 32. All markets have a Hall of Fame selector.
Okay.
It's the AP.
Oh, okay.
Which is All Pro, which, you know, I could almost argue is as important as the Hall of Fame, because the one designation that really carries weight nowadays is All Pro,
mm-hmm.
because the AP that's the recognized awards of the NFL. The MVP, that's the AP voters. And I've when I used to be at the Star, I hit my head against the wall about with these guys about how can you possibly not have every franchise, every city. And I wasn't arguing for me. I said, but every city needs to have a voter. And I go back to, was it 2003 when Peyton and Steve McNair shared
That's
MVP
right.
voting? Nashville had a vote. Indy didn't. Well, if Indy had a vote, again, not me, anybody in the city has a vote, then we change history. Steve McNair, as great of a quarterback as he is, wasn't a co-MVP. So it's just wrong. And they give you the song and dance, and I finally just said, fine, you guys do what you want to do. But to not have every city represented, and yet you've got some it's so heavily slanted towards the East Coast, it is wrong. And that was a battle I tried to fight, and finally I said, okay, you guys win, but it's wrong. So, but the one thing that the Hall of Fame does, everybody has, there is a vote. Now, there's
okay.
So there's 30 markets, and then there's 19 at-large guys, and they're getting what I like about it is they're getting more and more. I'm gonna say outside, unconventional. Tony Dungy, Bill Polian, Lisa Salters. They've added more national people that aren't necessarily, you know, conventional newspaper folks and all that. The idea has always been, and this always drives me crazy too. Well, you know, the media guys, they bring bias into the room. Well, you think Bill Polian doesn't have bias on Peyton and Reggie and Edgar? I mean Tony with Derek Brooks and all these guys. Are you kidding me? Rondé right. Barber? I mean, you know, we got Tony talking up Rondé Barber. Well, of course he is. So don't tell me that everybody in the room doesn't have some biases. I just happen to believe that the media, which I'm a part of, I can separate any bias I have to where I wonder if a player or a coach can. So none of them are perfect, and I always see these stories, well, get rid of it, and let's do it different. Well, how? Somebody had put out there, well, we need to have – this is on the AP voting. We need to have the NFL vote. Who? The NFL, what? Who? I mean, you know, the NFL is a big umbrella. Who are you going to have vote for it? So it's no perfect way, but the way the AP does it is just – it's ridiculous, and I'll go to my dying grave – saying that they've got to fix it. They won't, because they feel the way they're doing it's right. But at least with the Hall of Fame, everybody has a voice. AP's not that way, and it's just wrong.
Member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame Selection Committee, that is Mike Chappell. Follow him on Twitter at mchappell51. What's the 51 about, Chap?
It's the year I was born.
Okay, fair enough.
1951.
Mike Chappell. So in closing, Chap, here's what I got from you today. You talked to Jim Irsay after the season ended. You can't tell us what he said. You voted on Reggie Wayne getting into the Hall of Fame. You can't tell us what the vote is. So at least take us out with something you can talk about, and that's another Hall of Famer. I want you to take 2 minutes and talk about Peyton Manning and something that surprised you off the field that he's done personally for you, because as I said earlier, you're an ambassador for these guys. You carried the shoe into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Give me one Peyton story that not many people have heard.
It's not what he did for me. He did for me, I guess, in my profession. Is two things. We talked to him at the combine in 98. We had him press up against the bar at the Louisiana State Grill at the Crown Plaza. There were like 20 of us. This was before the combine was a monster. And we go, and then I went to his workout in Knoxville a month later or whatever, and I passed him in the hallway. He was walking with Polian and Tom Condon. He says, "How you doing, Mike?" I've never met him one-on-one in my life.
Wow.
Yet he was so schooled on media that he knew who I was. So, yeah, it's not a boost to me, but sure. I was stunned. And then all the years that they were primetime games, 8 o'clock starts, and we had newspaper deadlines, he comes in after a loss, the San Diego loss where he throws 6 interceptions.
Sure.
And we're on bad deadlines. He comes in his uniform and gives us 3 minutes because he knows we're on deadline. Nobody does that. Well, Peyton did it because he understood that we had jobs to do, and he was as downcast as anybody, but he gave us time because he knows we had work to do. And it's little stuff like that that made a huge impression with me.
Right. Right. Wow, I just love it. When we talk about Hall of Fame, I talk about what happened last year watching Edgerrin and Peyton go in like that, and obviously you were a catalyst for that.
Right.
But their play on the field also determined a lot. But again, the ambassador for a lot of Indianapolis Colts going into the Hall of Fame, that is Mike Chappell. Follow him on Twitter at mchappell51. The 51 was the year he was born. Chap, I so appreciate the help because, you know, it's the offseason. We got a lot of moves that are going to be shaken with Chris Ballard, Frank Wright, and Jim Irsay in the front office. We want to keep in touch with you. Follow him on Twitter again at mchappell51. Mike, I appreciate the help.
Stay in touch, guys.
Always will.
Thanks,
Mike
Chap.
Right
Thanks,
there.
Chap.
Yeah, guys, that
Thank
was
you.
Great. We are brought to you with this Colts official podcast by our friends at WinBet. So much more is going to be happening in the next couple of weeks. Don't forget about the new league year that happens in March, because there's a lot of moving and shaking. We're going to tell you what the latest is as far as personnel goes, coaching changes. You can find out all the information you need at Colts.com. And don't forget to download the Colts app, because you can read J.J. Stankovic. You can watch and listen to Lara Overton and myself, et cetera, et cetera. All the news is there for you. Again, a big thanks to our friends at WinBet, the official sportsbook partner of your Indianapolis Colts. For J.J. Stankovic, for Lara Overton, I am Jeffrey Gorman. Guys, I so appreciate the time today. Let's do it again next week, because we will have more stuff to talk about after these playoffs and, of course, what the Colts are going to do. How's that sound?
Sounds great.
I'm in.
Okay, JJ, you were a little, I mean, that was like a fart in church right there. Can you get a little excitement, please?
Listen, it was an early morning for me here, Jeffrey. That's about all the excitement I can muster at the end of this podcast.
I appreciate you guys and what you go through to put this on, as well as everything else you do. The best content team in the NFL is your Indianapolis Colts. All right, JJ. All right, Lara. Have a great couple of days. Keep us informed on Colts.com and the Colts app. Don't forget to download that today, and we'll talk to you all next week.